I'm Lights, Camera, Jackson, and this is the first episode of a special new podcast series, Cinema Stories. Hope you're doing well. Thank you for listening. Do you remember going to the movies, that going to the movies theatrical experience? Yeah, it seems like forever ago, but it wasn't that long ago. I've had so many crazy, fun, memorable, wild experiences of going to the movies, being in that movie theater over the last 15 years or so. And I thought, in this transition time, in this in-between time between when we went to the movies and now we're all stuck at home watching movies and maybe we will be going back very soon, I thought, let's take a trip down memory lane and let's shine a spotlight on the movie theaters and the movie theater experience and also see what could happen in the future. What could the future be like for going to the movies? And I thought I would bring on some colleagues, fellow film critics, entertainment journalists, members of the Critics' Choice Association that I'm a part of, to talk about favorite memories, favorite stories, favorite days, favorite films. We're going to have some nice conversations and talk about the past, the present, the future, and get into all of that. My first guest here on Cinema Stories has been in this biz for about 25 years now, reviewing movies, interviewing celebrities, junkets, premieres, all kinds of stuff from Viva Las Vegas. Wow, went to high school with Jimmy Kimmel, who's everywhere right now, especially with the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire reboot. And we'll get into all of things Jeffrey K. Howard here on Cinema Stories. Jeff, it is so great having you as my first guest. First of all, how are you doing in Vegas?
I'm doing pretty good. You know, we had a long quarantine here for the past 2 or 3 months. Our governor's reopening the city partially June 4th, which is great, to try to get some tourists back in here. It's all, you know, I tell people it's one day at a time. I don't have the answers. I don't know what's going on. We just have to wait and see. But starting to open up the city and businesses again, and the hotels and the casinos with all new strict guidelines, that's the step in the right direction. So I'm hopeful, and I'm ready to get out of my place. I've been quarantined for 10 weeks.
Oh, yeah, it's been a lot. I drove by one of the movie theaters near me the other day, and I was just seeing the signs up saying at a Regal, you know, we hope to be open very soon. It's just it's something I never thought I would see in my life. It's just crazy.
I just don't know what they're going to show. You know, you can't even here. Our governor said, governor of Nevada said, movie theaters allowed to open, but they're showing Back to the Future and Jaws, and you know, are people going to go out and see something like that? We need product, and it's just kind of a catch-22. You got to wait for Hollywood to reopen and start back production again, and so it's just really a confusing time.
Yeah, I agree. I think the theaters that have opened so far, they've shown some recent-ish films and then some of the older films, but I think it's going to take a film like Tenet, which as of this recording is still scheduled to come out on July 17th. I think it's going to take a new film like Tenet in order to bring a lot of people into the theaters.
Definitely. It will take that. And, you know, we have a drive-in here, one of the most successful drive-ins in the country, one of the few left. And it's been showing The Wretched, that IFC Midnight film, for the past 3 or 4 weeks. And that's the little movie that could, you know, it keeps going and going. And I can't believe that drive-ins are having a resurgence right now after they were just so near extinction. So it's just, you know, people are saying that, you know, it's a new golden age of drive-ins. I go, well, it just depends on when the theaters open and what they have. But you can't get into our drive-in here. I mean, it's sold out every night.
It's amazing. Yeah, we've got about 5 in upstate New York where I am as well that are doing really well, have been for the past couple of weekends. What do you think, honestly? I mean, you're celebrating 25 years this year, which is amazing. Blink of an eye, sort of, when you look back?
Oh, absolutely. You know, some of my other colleagues, some other of the film critics, we always tell stories about we're watching a movie on television or we're channel surfing, and we're like, why does that seem so familiar, even though we know the film? Then we say to ourselves, well, I did that junket back in 2003. I did that junket in 2004. So, it went by really fast. And things I think just happened maybe a few years ago, they turn out to be 15 years ago or more. You know, so it's real a sobering fact that I've done 25 years in this business. But I was just like any other critic when I started out. I started writing for the daily newspaper here, the Las Vegas Sun, at $50 a week. And just work your way into radio, you just pay your dues, you know. I wanted to be taken seriously as a film critic and be a journalist. I just didn't want to be somebody who reviews movies in this day and age where you can get a YouTube channel or something like that. I wanted to get the credentials and the background to be an actual journalist and a film critic. So that takes a long time. And also the trust, it takes people to know who you are and, like, you know, to be consistent.
Yeah. Yeah. And what was the movie or the movie theater experience that really kicked it off for you professionally?
Well, that goes back to 1977. That goes back to when I saw Close Encounters of the Third Kind for the first time. And I was about 11 years old, going on 12. And that was, you know, up until that time, I was a movie fanatic. I would go see movies. And at that age, you think they're real. You know, you think you're watching Star Wars and you're watching all these movies. You think these places actually exist. Darth Vader exists. But when I saw Close Encounters of the Third Kind, that was the first time in my life that I questioned those names going by the front of the movie. I'll never forget that. I'm like, what's a director? What's a producer? You mean this is a business? Like, you can make a living from this and you can be a filmmaker? So after I saw Close Encounters, I got every book I could on filmmaking. I would write when I got into junior high and high school, because I was college bound someday. I would get catalogs from USC and UCLA School of Cinema. I would get catalogs from Cal Arts. And so I was just determined to go to film school. Well, of course, unless you're a Rockefeller, first getting accepted to a film school or second affording to go to film school was nearly impossible. And then my own university here in Las Vegas, UNLV, they offered a 4-year course. And I was the very first film class back in 1991. So it was great. I got a degree in film, got a degree in communications and journalism. And I went on to get my master's in communications. So and also I auditioned for a TV show at the university, and that's how I got into criticism with another film student. I said, hey, instead of being two film students who are going to with a student script or student film, let's get into criticism, because, you know, Siskel and Ebert don't speak for our generation. And that's how it happened. And we just ended up on the NBC affiliate after we graduated, ABC, CBS. And it just, and you know this, it's a merry-go-round. You can never, movies never stop. So unless you make a choice to say, I don't want to do this anymore, it just keeps coming and coming, and we just got caught up in it, and I've been doing it 25 years now.
It's amazing. That's a great story. For those who are sort of into this world a little bit and know a little bit about it through seeing movies, that whole junket experience, you mentioned the junket, going to screenings at these junkets and then being able to talk to these celebrities and the directors and the filmmakers afterwards, is it for you a different vibe, a different mental experience, as opposed to seeing a film at a screening or a regular showing with a traditional audience?
No, because 90% of the time we are seeing it with an audience. Even though there's half the audience is journalists scheduled to do the junkets and do interviews, they pack in, they bring in guests, they bring in other people. So, or sometimes we're at a promo screening out of town seeing it also. So it's rare that we see them with only 20 or 30 people or in a special screening room on the Paramount lot or Warner lot. It's usually in a movie theater filled with people. And even the journalists, they're humans too. So you feed off their emotion, you feed off the energy of the audience. And, I'm mixed on it. Sometimes I like this, it depends on the type of movie that I want to see with an audience. And sometimes I like seeing a movie with only 5 people in the theater. So it just depends on that. But no, I see every movie like I'm seeing it, you know, for the first time, obviously, and just letting the story, you know, wash over me, just take it in totally as it is. And then think about something afterward, you know, think about, oh, but did the story work? Did the acting work? Did the special effects, did they complement the story? You know, all kinds of things you think about afterward. But I go into every movie totally shut off. I don't watch trailers, and I let the movie just tell me the story for the first time and have that emotional, personal experience.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you miss the trailer? Because here's the thing about trailers. Trailers spoil so much, but they're a core part of the movie theater experience. So in some respects, I don't miss seeing trailers, and in some respects, I do miss seeing trailers. How do you feel about that?
Oh, when I was younger, before I became a critic, before I became a professional, I was obsessed with trailers. Are you kidding? That was my favorite part, going to the movies and seeing the coming attractions. But as I started doing this professionally, they don't show trailers in front of our screenings. I see every movie, just about 90% of these movies, at a promotional screening, at a press screening, and they don't show trailers at the beginning of that. So I just stop kind of watching them. And when I do watch them, sometimes they give away too much of the story, which could be a complaint, but it doesn't bother me. But if there's a big tentpole movie that everyone's asking me about, like Tenet, like Rise of Skywalker, right? Something that everybody's going crazy on the internet, I'll break down and watch it. And I remember the one time I was obsessed with the Harry Potter trailers because I love those films. And I remember watching The Prisoner of Azkaban the months before it came out. I went through that thing frame by frame to see the images, like, what is going on with this next film? So much so that I picked up the book. I hadn't read any of the books from the films. And I read Prisoner of Azkaban, and it was one of the most incredible experiences I've had with a book. And then when the movie came out, I was so disappointed. They had left out chapters of the book. They had changed things. So it was still an incredible experience. But that was the first time that I read a book because I saw a trailer. And I couldn't wait 3 or 4 months to find out what all of this was going on in this trailer. I read the book. So. Mm.
What are the Vegas audiences like? Are they, when you go to see the movies, is it rowdy? I mean, everybody has this conception about Viva Las Vegas and the slot machines and the casinos and the lively nature of it all. Or is it kind of just similar stoked movie fans anywhere you go around the country?
Oh, absolutely. You know, you're using a stereotype that everyone here locally are gamblers, you know, so that's the tourist. That's like asking people living in Anaheim, so do people in Anaheim treat Disney movies a little different when they see them? No, it's like movie fans are movie fans. And in Las Vegas specifically, we have more movie theater screens per capita than any other city in the country. And since Vegas, you know, even though we're closed right now or about to reopen, we have, you know, 60 million people that come through this town from all over the world. So a lot of the studios, a lot of the TV networks do all kinds of special screenings here. They do test screenings to get people's feedback. We're not allowed to be those because they spot us a mile away going, yeah, it's a critic, get out of here. You know, but they show all kinds of movies here and TV shows to get people's reactions and to do all kinds of focus groups. So Vegas is very unique in that respect. But all the movies I see are with a lot of what we call, we call them prize pigs. They are the people that get the free tickets for the screenings at the radio stations, at the newspapers. It's always the same good 20% of the audience are the same people every week who are like a group, and they look for these movies. But they're just like any other audience. They want to see a free movie. They're getting passes through a radio station or for a newspaper, and they're eager to be there. They're movie fans.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The movie screenings, the advanced screenings that have been held here in upstate New York, Albany, New York over the years. I mean, when I went to them a lot, it was the same people. You're so right. The same over a certain age, like 60, 65. Yes.
And these are the same people I've seen for 15, 20 years, not just recently. And we call them prize pigs because they win these prizes, these movie passes. It's a term of endearment. I'm not trying to be mean. But I even know some of them. They call me, hey, movie guy. I've seen them for years. And they're real sweet, but they have never, like us, have never paid for a movie. And the thing is, we see these screenings. Here's what I really love about I was a movie pass fanatic when it first came out, and I was using it for everything. But then they started, you know, changing the rules, and I dropped it. And, you know, Regal has their own loyalty plan now. I use AMC Stubbs List. You can see 12 movies a month for, you know, $20, because a lot of the movies they screen for us are the big films. So we don't get to see smaller films. So now I get to see documentaries or foreign films or art films with the AMC Stubbs List. I love that. And it's really sad because I know we see movies like Trolls World Tour and these big Hollywood films, but I really enjoy using my movie pass or my Stubbs pass to go see these other types of films, movies they would never screen for us. And also, I can't afford that. Who can afford to spend, you know, all the money to watch an extra 10 movies a month?
Well, I have to tell you, in some cases over the years, even for some free screenings here in upstate New York, sometimes the critics didn't get invited, but I would still get passes off of GoFabo or AdvancedScreenings.com, and I would be in the lines with some of these people anyway. And it was wild experiences just waiting, you know, 2-3 hours early to get into a screening of a movie. Fun to kind of understand that energy, because people will do anything to see a movie for free, and I can understand that.
It's expensive. Yeah, my hat's off to them. They want to see all these movies. And see, I can't do that because if it's not screened for critics, they will not let me in the theater. So yeah. I would have to see it on opening day and to review it. So if you're in line with a GoFabo pass, and I've tried that before, they will not let media into these screenings. I know. So you got lucky.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Maybe it's a little different in different parts of the country, but hey.
Yes, absolutely.
Hey, you know, we met Jeffrey K. Howard. He's here with me, the Vegas film critic all over social media, right here on Cinema Stories. You know, I went to Vegas for the first time. It was summer 2018. And I wanted to time out to see if I could see a screening of something while I was in Vegas for a couple days. And it was Skyscraper. It was The Rock. And yes. That was such a nice night because I was like, I was texting you and I was going, hey, on the way to the theater, we, you know, on this certain highway or something. And you were like, you are so far away. You have to hurry as much as you can. That is, yeah, that was crazy. But that was so fun seeing you. And that movie ended up being great because The Rock tweeted me after my review came out of Skyscraper. So I will always remember that experience with you and The Rock with being in Vegas. I will never forget that.
Well, I'm glad you had a good time. And to offshoot on that, people always ask me, you know, what my favorite movie of all time is and those kind of questions. But I know the very first movie I ever saw in the theater. Can you believe that? It was The Poseidon Adventure back in 1972, and I was like 7, 8 years old.
Wow.
And I had never, I mean, can you imagine seeing your first movie, you know, about a cruise ship that turns upside down? I mean, it was the most incredible adventure. And then 3 or 4 years later, I saw Towering Inferno. So I have been, and then Airport, and then Tidal Wave, and any kind of, then Volcano came along decades later. So I have been a disaster film fanatic. And to see Skyscraper with one of my favorite actors, you know, The Rock, I was just going crazy because I've been watching that movie, the making of that, and hearing all the press releases about that. I could not wait for Skyscraper to hit theaters. And I remember that was just a great experience. So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. It delivered. It delivered what you
hoped. Absolutely.
Yes, yes. What are some of the wild, wacky, crazy stories that you remember? Things that happened at screenings or regular showings of movies you might have attended, the audience got into it, or something really unpredictable or unexpected happened?
I have a great story for the 40th anniversary of The Empire Strikes Back. And back when I was about 13, it came out, it was 1980, and we were excited to see that film. My friend, my best friend at the time, he got the little paperback, so he's reading about the movie. He knew about it, everything that was going to happen before the movie came out, which I thought was crazy. His mom got 2 tickets to a special Nevada Cancer Society benefit screening of The Empire Strikes Back. And this was a full week before it came out. So we show up there. Of course, this is back at a huge single theater, which is gone now, the Parkway Theater here in Las Vegas. And we, being kids, right, we sat in the front row, which I can't do now, but I used to be obsessed. Before puberty happened, I sat in the front row for everything. And then I realized, what am I doing? So anyway, we're watching the movie. It's packed. You know, the energy is just electric because, you know, everyone's waiting for the movie. And I'll never forget this. The scene where they're talking about freezing Han Solo in carbonite. And Billy Dee Williams, Lando, goes, if you put him in there, it may kill him. And he's like, well, you don't want our prize, you know, damage. We will test it first on Captain Solo. The moment he said that, the film made that classic and it melted. It melted. And you heard the theater scream like somebody threw a bomb in there, right? So it's like a collective, everyone just was howling like, no. And it took them an hour to fix it. Because this is back in the day when the film melts and unspools, it's a mess. So they had to sit there and fix it. It took an hour. So I'll never forget that story when I saw The Empire Strikes Back. But it didn't deter from how great the movie was. But that was a crazy night.
Wow, that is something. Yeah, nuts, nuts. I know that that made me think of A Star Is Born premiered at one of the film festivals a year and a half ago. I forget which one it was. And the film stopped and Bradley Cooper was like looking around going, what do we do? What do we do? Yeah, you hope those things don't happen. But
that's a nightmare when the talent is there and this is their baby. And I recently interviewed Clark Duke for Arkansas. And he has, that movie's fantastic. It's one of my favorites of you if you haven't seen it yet. And he has worked on this movie for a decade, you know, borrowing, pleading, getting the talent, getting the financing together. This guy is like a real incredible filmmaker, but it's taken a decade for his baby, his first movie to come out. And of course, it was supposed to premiere at the South by Southwest and the virus, you know, stopped everything.
Right.
And I asked him, he was really depressed because he still has yet to see his movie with an audience. So he has not experienced, you know, that energy, like watching, he's very Tarantino-ish, you know, I don't think that's a bad thing. You know, he copies from the best. And so I can't believe the experience I had at home watching Arkansas could have been so much more incredible on the big screen. And then I felt bad for him because he didn't have that opportunity to feed off the audience that loves his film. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he's really depressed about that. So, but yeah, there's nothing like the movie going experience. And I can't wait to get back to it. I'm kind of glad because you know how many movies we see and I travel a lot. All of our movie theaters in Las Vegas, with the exception of one, are all inside hotels and casinos for the last 30 years. So we don't drive up in a parking lot. And, like, you know, when you came to see Skyscraper, yeah, you don't, there's only one or two theaters in town of a city of 2 million where you can just park or walk into a theater. That doesn't happen because it's a whole entertainment experience. We have the hotel, the casino, the restaurants, the gaming, and, and then the movie theater. So it's all a bowling alley. So it's all a one-stop shop that these casinos have done, and they're state-of-the-art. So I kind of like had a break for the last 2 months of not driving all over town, you know, going to hotels and casinos to see my movies.
That's right. Now I remember the running in part before I got into Skyscraper. It was like, oh yeah, there's slots over here and there's food over here and there's all those things. But yeah, it's interesting you bring up the talk about the film festivals here, because I feel like when I go to film festivals, it is a sort of different vibe, because maybe the anticipation levels are even greater than normal and the audience really gets into it. How do you feel when you've been to a Toronto Film Festival and several others, or Sundance Film Festival and several others? Can you tell those experiences are slightly different vibes when you're in these theaters watching these films?
You know, the vibe I get, I've been going to Sundance now for the last 4 or 5 years, and it's taken me 4 years just to understand Sundance. It's such a behemoth. And this year I finally have felt that I understand all the aspects of it, from the interviews, from the traveling, where to stay, and just how to get around. I'm just now, after 5 years, starting to feel comfortable with that. But when I go to screenings at Sundance, it's a totally different vibe than I am with fans. Like, I see a screening here in Las Vegas. I feel like a more critical attitude in the air. You know, it's more of a, you know, like an industry screening more than a fun, you know, fan screening. And people are a lot more critical with that. Now they're a lot more polite, you know, I think, because I just have so many, there's not a screening I go to here in Vegas that people aren't talking, people aren't eating, people aren't, they're just being rude, you know, and it just drives me crazy, because people are used to being home on their couch and talking during a movie, or pausing during a movie, or taking a phone call during a movie. And I won't watch, there's certain friends of mine, I will not watch a movie with you, because you'll talk or you'll ask questions because you know I've seen it. That's what I love about Sundance and Toronto, is that people are respectful. No one's going to talk. No one's going to, that's the one thing I do notice. And also with the film festivals, other than the press, you have a lot of fans there who just love to be there. So you can just feel people want to stop and talk to you about movies. And I love Sundance. I really do. And this year was crazy, because I think I did 40 interviews, the most I've ever done. And I didn't get to see many films because I was, you know, doing 10 interviews a day, and we just, the virus hit right after that. So we were lucky to get that in this year.
Right, right. But yeah, hopefully when the theaters come back, audiences who have been used to now for the last 3-4 months being at home and watching movies at home will understand that you got to be quieter and more respectful right. in the in-theater experience.
Well, I think it's worse. I think they're home now and they've just been talking and eating hamburgers and McDonald's and stuff like that. And I don't, you know, I keep reading conflicting news reports. I don't know what to believe. I see one report, 70% of people polled can't wait to get back to the movies, you know, go back to the theaters. 80% polled says they prefer to watch movies at home. So I don't know what to believe. I think you just got to open these things up, put in some good movies that's going to draw some people. But some of these major films got pushed to next year, The Fast and Furious, Jungle Cruise, all these movies. I think the summer, I really don't think Tenet's going to happen. I really don't. I think you can maybe go for the fall, but I don't think people are going to feel comfortable enough to go back in the movie theaters next month. I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, they got to make those decisions quickly, though. Warner Brothers, they got to figure this out quickly. I mean, you can wait to the last second. That's what happened on like March 12th when 8 movies got canceled in one day, including A Quiet Place, which was supposed to open the next weekend. It'll be interesting to see what happens. I'm not quite sure either. But Disney says, look, we want Mulan to come out on the 24th, no matter what. So it's going to be a very fluid
Artemis Fowl going to Disney Plus. I mean, that is huge. That really is. And I just think that, I think it's just too soon. July is just too soon, because I saw on the news that the states that have relaxed their distancing and their rules, that they're going, the COVID cases are going back up, you know? So it's like, if the next month, because there's so much relaxing has been done to the states, and you see a surge again, that's going to set everything back. So I don't still think the movie theaters will be ready, if anything, until September.
Right, right. It's all about timing. But what will the movie theaters do? Are they going to take people's temperatures, you know, every time you walk in? Are they going to have to clean off the surfaces every time? I think yes to both of those things.
Well, I see that now when I'm going out to restaurants now, slowly returning to society. I don't think the movie theaters have the problem. I think it's the studios. They don't have content. They're pushing everything back. Production is halted, you know, so they're. I don't know, what are they going to show? And that's happening with television now. Television has been our savior for the last 2 or 3 months. You know, new TV movies and all the streaming and all the different cable channels. They're running out of content. Can you imagine with nothing new to watch? what are people going to do? Watch Friends all day?
I think Ted Sarando said on CBS the other day, he's got content to fill Netflix until the end of 2021.
Yes, Netflix is the big elephant in the room right now. They are enjoying an incredible golden age. Everybody's watching it. They have some really good. I love The Wrong Missy. I love the, what was the Chris Hemsworth movie?
Extraction.
Oh my God, was that incredible. You know, so yeah, Netflix has just got it going right now, and they're going to be the ones to beat. They really are. But if they don't figure out the theaters and the movie studios, people are going to get more acclimated to staying at home. So, but I think people will come out. They said that when television happened in the 1950s, the movie theaters were dead, and that didn't happen at all. So I think people are going to want to go out, have that experience. But I think, what was it, Amazon? Is it Amazon who's buying the Egyptian Theater in L.A.? They did one step closer.
I think Netflix wants it for their screen.
Oh, was it Netflix? I know Amazon was buying another theater.
AMC, they wanted AMC.
Right, exactly. They wanted the whole chain. Once that happens, then you're going to see that window from Netflix. You're going to see day and date. Because why not give it to both people? I don't understand that. If you want to go out for the experience, you know, go out for a nice dinner, go see a movie. It's a different thing for a date to go to a movie theater than sitting at home on the couch watch. You know what I mean? It's just more of an experience. So I think there's room for both, really. If you want to go to the theater or if you want to stay at home, I think all the money's coming to the same place, right?
Right. How has it been the last couple months? You've had big movies. We've had big movies like Trolls World Tour and Scoob coming to people's homes. We've had other movies like Bad Education, my favorite film of the year so far, just play on HBO anyway. How has it been for you watching some of these bigger movies, a big movie like Extraction and films like that, watching these movies at home without that audience distraction around you? Was it odd at first couple of these films for you?
I'll tell you what I've really enjoyed about, if that's the right word, about this pandemic and being quarantined, is not so much watching Trolls, not so much watching Extraction, what I love, because I felt like it was a big theater experience watching those. I'm having more fun with these smaller films coming out, with these documentaries, with these horror films that, like for The Wretched, for example. It's just an amazing horror film about a teenager who's at a summer beach community in New England, and this witch lives in the woods that's terrorizing these kids. And I just love that. And then find out that's hitting all the drive-ins and it's doing well, or the Vast, was it the Moment of Clarity?
Great.
Yeah, The Vast of Night was fantastic. You know, this was a film festival. It toured all these film festivals last year. And now that's an amazing thriller, Twilight Zone type of film. And then also, what was it, Last Moment of Clarity? It's a Vertigo type thriller. This guy, his wife gets killed and he wakes up and finds out that he sees an actress that looks like his wife. Is it her? It's just like Vertigo. So there's a great Hitchcock thriller. So to see those kind of movies that would never make the light of day, meaning publicity-wise, they put on VOD, and unless you're scrolling through your cable box or something, you would never notice it. Now people are finding these films and they're getting a chance to shine, these filmmakers, sometimes first-time filmmakers. So I, you know, it's hard for me. We see so many regular movies in the theater, you know, 200-300 movies a year, and then put on top of that all the shows on Netflix and Hulu and Disney Plus and now Peacock and HBO Max. We don't have time, literally, to sit there and watch these smaller films. So now you can, and I'm having so much fun watching these guys develop their style and also getting interviews with them, because it's a really good time for me for that. But watching these big films at home, there's a part of me in the back going, God, I wish I saw Extraction on a huge screen with an audience cheering. You know, that's what I was thinking about. But it's still a great experience.
Right. I hope that these smaller films, these independent, you know, the independent cinemas and the ones that rely on word of mouth for these films and things like that, I hope these kinds of films that we've been seeing on VOD the last couple months, when they are released in the future, I hope people still go and support these cinemas and support these little movies and get them out there.
Yeah, there was a documentary called Little Rivers, and it's about the history of fly fishing in New York. Now, just me pitching that, most people go, oh my God, yeah, really, fly fishing? It is the most remarkable and charming documentary because of the characters, the people who are the fishermen, the museums that's dedicated to it, the history dedicated to it, the beautiful locations. I mean, I can't tell you how much fun I had watching Little Rivers. And, you know, it makes me want to go fishing.
What do you hope brings people back into the movie theater experience? What do you hope when you go back to the theater the first time, whether it's for Tenant or whatever movie it's going to be? What do you hope that experience is like to make it safe and comfortable for you and for you to be able to enjoy that in-theater experience once again?
100% when they have a vaccine. When they have a vaccine is when I'll feel totally 100% safe. I recently got tested. My county has been offering free tests, and it's really easy to do. You get in your car, you make an appointment, you drive up, they test you, they send you an email a couple of days later. And I'm, you know, I'm not a carrier. I'm completely healthy. So I think that's what worries me, because you see all these news stories about people in these swimming pools and at these parties and these block parties going on, and one person tested positive, or these church services, and all of a sudden there's 200 people they could have infected. And when you see these news reports where they show you that people coughing, how the droplets spread farther than they thought, you know, it just makes me really nervous, you know. So there's always something in the back of me, in the back of my brain, if I'm going to a movie theater that's packed with people. And I don't think they're going to do that right away. They're going to start spacing people. You know, they're not going to sell out every seat. And I always think of that with restaurants. You know, they calculate movie theaters, and when it comes to space, they utilize every bit of it for maximum profit. So if a restaurant needs to sell out 90% of its seats, they're only opening up with 40% or less, you know, how are they making money? How are they making money in a movie theater if they're 500 seats and they're only selling 200 because of the virus? So I think I'll feel comfortable when there's a vaccine. And but I'm willing to go back. I'm missing my colleagues. I'm missing all the other critics I would see two or three times a week, because we're all close. We all know each other.
Right. And we all get to talk about these different movies or text each other on social media. Hey, I saw this. Hey, I saw this. I was on a radio show a week or so ago, and I said, look, I'll go back to the movies. I'm okay wearing a mask and just, you know, either buying a ticket or just walking in and saying I'm here, and I sit in my chair, and I don't do anything else. I won't bother you. I won't distract any other people. I'll just sit in the chair with the mask and watch the movie and walk out. I will be fine with that for however long that needs to be, until maybe there's a vaccine or maybe things get back to normal.
I agree. I have no problem wearing a mask. I wear it when I go out. I have a Nightmare Before Christmas mask, and I have a Rick and Morty mask. And people always want to buy them off me. And I say eBay. So, yeah, I'm the same way. I'd say if you take all the precautions, they're sterilizing the theaters, you're wearing a mask, there's social distancing, those are the guidelines they want us to follow, that I'm willing to go back to the theater for that. Absolutely.
I love Nightmare Before Christmas. I saw that film in 3D, the re-release in theaters, when it was like, let's see, 07, 08, something like that. Did you first see it in a theater in 93 when it came out?
Yes, I saw the original when it was originally released. And I also saw that 3D one too. I saw it at the El Capitan there in Hollywood. They were showing it. And we also saw the sing-along version that was there. And that's what I love about the El Capitan. They always show Nightmare Before Christmas, the sing-along version, in Hollywood for the like 3 or 4 weeks leading up to Thanksgiving. It's like October. So you can always see the movie there. But that's one of my all-time favorites. And here's a quick story. A friend of mine back in the mid-90s or the early 90s, she was Tim Burton's personal assistant. And she says, hey, you want to go, you guys come out to California, come to Burbank, and you guys can meet Tim. We'll go to his office. So me and my best friend went out there, and we met her, and we waited in Tim Burton's office, but he never showed up. But when I was there, I saw all the storyboards for Ed Wood. I saw the script on his desk for Ed Wood. And in his little calendar he has on his desk, he has all those famous Beetlejuice kind of doodles all over the place. He had Godzilla models. And then she showed me the test footage for Kidnap the Santa Claus. So, and then last year, Tim Burton came to Vegas with his art exhibit at the Neon Museum.
I heard about that.
Right. And if you go to my YouTube page where I have my interview with Tim Burton for that, I told him that exact story. I said, and he goes, I was hiding out from an executive. I was like, you weren't there. You broke my heart. I came to meet you. And, but that was a great experience. And then I think you've watched that Prop Culture on Disney Plus.
Yes.
They go to Danny Elfman. They do a whole episode dedicated to Nightmare. And I was like, I was going crazy. Because are you kidding? Danny Elfman? Like the Danny Elfman? And also the greatest experience I had. It wasn't last October. It was the year before. I saw Nightmare live at the Hollywood Bowl. So we had Danny Elfman was there. They showed the movie. And all the music was live with an orchestra. They had the original cast back. Catherine O'Hara. Everybody was there to sing. And it was one of the greatest nights of my life. It was just the best.
That's awesome. Yeah, people have, you know, favorite directors and movies they wait years and years for, the anticipation for certain films to come out. I think that's what people are feeling with Tenet and Christopher Nolan fans right now, just eagerly awaiting it. But I hope they don't feel disappointed if it has to move to later in the year. I hope Christopher Nolan diehard fans are understanding in this case. And other films, whether it's A Quiet Place 2 from John Krasinski or Top Gun Maverick is coming out now at the end of the year. You know, everybody's attached to certain directors that they like and just hoping that these movies come out.
You know, I agree. And if they do try to do it in the summertime, I'm willing to go. But we'll just see what the crowd, you don't know what they're going to do. You don't know what's going to happen. And but I think if Disney releases Artemis Fowl well ahead of time, I mean, what did Trolls World Tour do? It made $100 million in the first week. It made more than the original in its initial release.
Right.
So yeah. VOD has definitely proven itself, and the theaters are nervous about it. So
they are nervous, but we will see. I am optimistic. I think you're optimistic, too. Hopefully, we get back to these great in-theater, movie theater experiences. Lights go down, and we're all just watching the movie at the same time on the giant screen and just enjoying it, right? I mean, I miss that feeling. Don't you miss just that feeling alone?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I miss the movie-going experience. I miss my friends. I miss all of that, you know, because it was something to do. Because being in quarantine, you know, especially our industry, it has been ravaged and destroyed overnight. And, you know, pretty much I love how, you know, VOD is and television and cable shows have like filled in the blanks, but still not the same. It really isn't going to the movie theater. So I can't wait to go back, and I'm ready. So let me know when it happens. We'll go.
Yes, yes, we'll go. And I want to come back to Vegas, too, because I had a really nice time.
Yeah, absolutely. So have you got Lights, Camera, Jackson? Have you got that tattooed on you somewhere yet?
Oh, not yet. No. And I wasn't 21 the first time I was in Vegas. And now that I'm 21, I could do a little bit of the, you know, a little making some money.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. Remember, stand on 17 and always bet on black.
Jeffrey K. Howard, thank you so much for being on this first episode of Cinema Stories, special podcast event series, talking with colleagues about the movie theater experience. This was great. Thank you so much for being on. And you're all over social at Vegas Film Critic, right?
Absolutely. Just type in Vegas Film Critic or go to VegasFilmCritic.com and have portals to all my social media. And thanks for supporting me.
Beautiful. You are welcome, sir. I'm Lights, Camera, Jackson. Thanks for listening to this episode of Cinema Stories. We'll be back with more episodes throughout the summer. I'm Lights, Camera, Jackson.